When I was in high school, I took a marketing education class, and the teacher, Mr. Joey Cromer, shout out to Mr. Cromer, gave us this example about McDonald's. And this was probably more relevant in 1996 and 1997 than it is today, but it always stuck with me. He said, wherever you see a McDonald's open, within a year, you will see a Burger King very close. Because Burger King had the model of letting McDonald's do all of the research on if a particular location can sustain a burger joint, will have the appropriate level of customers, the right traffic patterns, etc., etc. So McDonald's would do all the work, and Burger King would eventually build a location as close as they could. And that's competition. First, you'll have an innovator, someone to come in, light the way, and others will inevitably follow. And when they do, products and services will either become cheaper or the prices will remain flat for years. From an IT perspective, I've never seen a more clear example of competition keeping prices down and keeping prices in check than in the cloud. Amazon's web services are at a certain price point, and they're keeping Microsoft and Oracle and Google and IBM in check. But I have a feeling when Oracle fully ramps up, they're going to turn a lot of heads with their cost model. And that's the free market. So this week, we're talking about competition. I'm Joey Lombardi, and this is Sourcecast, episode 52. I know I promised a special story for episode 52 to celebrate 52 episodes, which basically makes up a full year, but I'm going to hold off until the week of the holidays for that one. But before we get into our main story, let's review the acquisitions that have taken place over the last 8 days. Verizon, they're selling their data centers to Equinix for $3.6 billion. Verizon chief executive Lowell McAdam basically said they're selling this off to raise cash, and it's not a core part of their business. Raise cash, you say? So let's think about this. They're getting $3.6 billion to sell off their data centers. And what did they recently purchase for $4.4 billion? Oh, that's right, Yahoo. Yahoo, as I have mentioned on this podcast, is a complete waste of money for a company like Verizon because they already own Yahoo. It's called AOL. And I maintain they have done nothing with the AOL properties, really. And they should invest a fraction of that money into getting traffic and unique visitors from the AOL properties like Huffington Post, as opposed to spending $4 billion on basically the same freaking company. And now they're looking to recoup some cash to make other acquisitions. I think it's fine that they're selling off their data centers. It's probably a smart move. They're not going to be competitive in that arena. But think of better things to do with your money, Verizon. And here's some follow-up to some recent acquisitions that we've been following for the last few months. Oracle is basically saying that they plan to benefit from the NetSuite acquisition, which of course they should. The interesting detail that came out over the last week is that they plan on keeping NetSuite as a separate global business unit within Oracle. So this is another example where Oracle has acquired a company and they are taking a siloed approach to shuffling them within the fold. I do not think this is a wise decision. They purchased NetSuite to increase their cloud footprint. Now this company is being segregated from the rest of the organization, which clearly needs better and more robust cloud focus. Having this separate unit is not going to help Oracle. They need to better integrate. Oracle is a notoriously siloed organization, and from my personal opinion, they would do much better with a more holistic approach to their customers' needs. Having to talk to 15 different people who head 15 different organizations when they're trying to sell a service is only going to hurt them. Take heed, Oracle, from a guy who's recording this in his basement. Make sure your people know how to sell these things. Remember that whole Microsoft LinkedIn acquisition? Yeah, we barely talked about it, right? There's one thing that you should note, and this is probably the last time we're really going to talk about it, unless they do something crazy. In order to get regulatory approval, Microsoft had to commit that competitors will still receive access to participate in Office add-ins and promotional opportunities within the Office store. And since we're talking about Microsoft and LinkedIn, New York Mag brought up a concern that if you tied your LinkedIn profile to a work-based Outlook account, you might have difficulties freeing that account when you switch jobs. I'm sure that Microsoft will figure out a way to avoid this particular problem, but it does blur a line that I think a lot of professionals would be uncomfortable with. And I also don't know if I want to be distracted with LinkedIn updates and LinkedIn information during my workday. Actually, I know I don't want to see what's going on in LinkedIn during my workday. I appreciate integration like the next guy, and I definitely like it when it does things for me that I would have had to have done manually, but Microsoft might want to be careful with this one. So let's talk about competition. The last four episodes of this podcast have focused on cloud, whether it's energy efficient computing or cost models, or how I see the infrastructure hosting as really more of a marketing ploy to get customers attached to the infrastructure and then hooked into a software as a service. And that is truly the only way that these cloud infrastructures and these cloud companies are going to make money. If you have Oracle, Amazon, Microsoft, IBM, and Google all fighting for customers and driving the price down, where are they going to make their money? It's going to be on the software as a service that they sell you when you sign up for their cloud. They're going to make the cloud itself, the infrastructure, they're going to make that easy to get to. They're going to make it easy to move to, so you can move from one supplier to the other. But where they're going to hook you and where they're going to, quote unquote, get sticky are the applications that you're using on their clouds. And here's where I think Oracle can actually make a dent. I do think that Oracle, when they fully ramp up with their cloud services, are going to be cheap. I think they're going to be very, very cost competitive because they have to be. But they also have an advantage of database. There are competitors, and they've gotten considerably better. Microsoft SQL is much better than it was a few years ago. Amazon has a database competitor now. There are open source database competitors that are available on all cloud services. There is competition, but Oracle is still the best when it comes to database. When you look at a software as a service application, the database is the centerpiece. It is the thing that makes that application run, that holds it together, and makes it work. All the front ends and fancy forms and agile web development, that all helps and that's great and that makes for a better user experience. The database is what makes the damn thing work. So if you have a cheap hosting platform with the best database on the market, you're going to attract some interest. Oracle's late to the game and they're going to suffer for that. And that's why they're going to have to come in with such a cutthroat price to get attention. But once they get people there, they do have a shot of being a true competitor. But there's something that I'm noticing with Oracle that tells me they're still far behind. A few weeks ago, we talked about green clouds. We talked about how Amazon and Google are investing millions of dollars on making sure their infrastructure is almost on 100% renewable energy. And yes, there are altruistic reasons for this. It's good for the environment, but it's also because their data centers consume so much energy that being on the grid is entirely unreliable. They have to have alternative energy sources to make sure that their clouds don't go down. Google just announced that in 2017, all of their data centers in the United States will be on 100% renewable energy. But where's Oracle on this? Oracle's been snapping up little cloud companies, but I haven't heard a word about their renewable energy strategy with the cloud. Most of the information that I can find about Oracle's strategy on sustainable energy usage is on their website, and it's not very up to date. I also did some digging on NetSuite before they got acquired to see what their renewable energy and solar energy usage is. And it seems that the company actually supports the solar industry and provide IT infrastructure, but I haven't seen anything regarding their actual usage of solar energy and renewable energy. And I'm sure it's out there. I didn't dig very hard. But I think it's fair to say at this point, from a renewable energy perspective, Oracle is not in the same league with their competitors at the moment. And I'm not bringing this up as an environmental concern. I am very concerned about the environment, but this particular topic, in terms of competition, tells me that they may be more prone to outages and power issues than their competitors because they haven't thought out alternative energy sources and more robust backups. If they're stuck on generators, will they be as durable in a crisis situation as Amazon and Google? For those of you that are buying these services, that's something to think about. If you have multiple competitors that have data centers in the same state and there are rolling outages, who will be more likely to sustain that outage and provide service? That's just another thing to consider when you're thinking about buying these services and moving to the cloud. And as I mentioned in the last podcast, this month, I'm actually making an advertising push. I want people to listen. I want this audience to grow. And I'm asking you, my listeners, pass the word around. Call it a Christmas gift to me. If you like the podcast, if you don't like it and you just listen to it because you want to hear me mess up, that's fine. But if you like this podcast, tell your colleagues, tell your friends to listen. Yes, I am going for a good old-fashioned word of mouth to grow this audience. But I do want to say I appreciate the support and help of everyone that has been listening to this podcast and providing feedback. I think episode 52 is so much better than episode 1. Don't even go back and listen to episode 1. It's terrible. But thank you. Thank you for providing me an audience and an outlet to get this stuff out there. And that's all we have for this week. As a reminder, you can find Sourcecast on iTunes, Google Music, and all of your favorite podcasting applications. Sourcecast is recorded in bucolic Mantua, New Jersey, and is produced and recorded by me. Music has been provided by Google. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.